Hello and welcome to the 10th episode of the XPRIZE Cars podcast. I'm Eric Boyd, and today I bring you an interview I conducted with Wolf Herf of Herf Duo, another XPRIZE competitor. I conducted this interview on March 21st, 2008 at the New York Auto Show, and we spoke of a wide variety of things, including his team, which consists of five team members, and technology. He has some technology about which he was not willing to reveal many details, but he claims it's highly efficient and that he has a completely novel method of energy storage for use on mobile devices, which will be great to see. We also had wide-ranging discussion about Amory Lovin, steel stamping, $20 a gallon gasoline, fuel vapor, regulation in the automotive industry, and other things like that. He plans to build two different cars, a mainstream class vehicle, which will probably be a retrofitted SUV, and an alternative class vehicle, about which he didn't say much other than that they're currently building the body right now. So without further ado, here's Wolf Herf. Hello, I'm sitting here with Wolf Herf of Herf Duo. He's another Automotive XPRIZE contestant, and he's going to first talk about his team.
The team is currently five people, of which three I can name myself. A Max Lubica, who's with a Fiat subsidiary, who's design and marketing. And John Viglio, he's a specialist in low current electric devices with South African Railways. Mm. He's a specialist, especially in the whole concept of electric drives, so I get. Okay. One further member is a fairly senior person in design laboratory. Obviously, I can't name him. My person, South African, German South African, grew up in South Africa, mechanical engineering at the University of Durban, 1982. My background is I'm a software developer. I've been doing software design, software development, software management, also restructuring companies. I'm also a business management specialist. The idea for this car, the whole car concept, came up in the middle of the 80s. While driving, doing lots of long distance driving in South Africa, I said, why can't this car drive itself? That's actually the basis of everything. Mm-hmm. Then, obviously, my software background, I looked at the cars and said, why are cars mechanical devices which use computers as a help? In those days, even less than today, I mean, unfortunately. But my idea was, let's turn the thing around. Let's take a computer as a brain and add, on a modular basis, mechanical items. So the original concept also, which I have here, was, for example, I divided a car into six logical areas: chassis, propulsion, suspension, power unit, body, control unit, fuel interface. And in the chassis, each part was modular. Based on that, I said, okay, how do we get a car to become more efficient? And the idea behind it was to actually the car to drive itself. Mm-hmm. Because the interface between a computer that drives a car and the car's user interface is virtually impossible. With my idea, because the computer controls the car, adding a interface that actually does the driver self-driving was a lot simpler. That was the original concept. The further development has moved in two parts. One is I've designed a complete engine and energy storage device. The engine is a internal combustion motor, mm-hmm. So that's nothing new. What is new is efficiency of the motor. We are planning to have efficiency over 50%.
Over?
50%.
Wow.
So the internal efficiency, that was the main aim, was how do I get, and especially in the same way as on the car, I've gone and said, what is the driving, what is the majority of the engine? And we've been able to, shall we say, the design looks, the figures aren't definite yet, but we are more than doubling the efficiency of a normal internal combustion engine.
Is that a new thermodynamic cycle, or have you just added?
sorry.
He's not
going to
tell us.
Sorry. It's a teaser. Let's put it this way. Just say, let's say the internal efficiency of the engine will increase quite a bit.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say, I'm going to say quite a bit. Secondly, I've looked at the whole cooling process, which is the second part where the engine, or shall we say, the energy that's created. Let's face it, if we take a motor vehicle now And even if it's driving completely efficiently, a petrol engine, you're looking at max 26% efficiency of fuel.
Yeah, it still throws away three quarters of its energy,
And that's at perfect efficiency. If you drive a car like you drive in New York today, you're running probably 8 to 10% efficiency because you are spending most of your time just running the engine in its total inefficient parts. So the route that everyone's going with hybrid is the right way, because what you do is you put the engine into the most efficient area and use the energy transfer, use the hybrid or the electric motors as the energy transfer. Motor design said either electrical or hydraulic. I know one of the competitors is going for hydraulic transfer. The trouble with hydraulic transfer, it has a lot of advantages. It's very high power, but it has problems with speed. So trying to transfer energy using hydraulics with high speed is not very good. Electrical is more efficient, but it hasn't, 10, 15 years ago, it wasn't that far. Now it's that far. So the hybrid idea, or should I say the drivetrain, in my concept, is an electric drivetrain. If I'm going to go for wheel hub motors or not is the second question. We're going to decide that. Mm-hmm. Most companies are now going for so-called onboard motors because of the unsprung mass problem. If you solve the unsprung mass problem using an active suspension, then you can go for
hub motors.
So the problem with going for what's it called, going for hub motors, is the issue of unsprung mass. So combining, and that's my plan in the long term, is to go for hub motors with an active suspension. But until then, we still have to decide whether to do that because of the unsprung mass issue. The drivetrain, I can obviously talk about that. That's really electrical. The energy storage is not battery bound.
Not batteries.
Okay. Batteries are a good, cheap way of doing it, not cheap. Batteries are an easy way of doing it.
Yeah. Okay. It's been known for hundreds of years.
Yeah. But if you look at current batteries, you get 35 watts hours per kilo. So you can go the route to Tesla's going and pop in 500 kilos of batteries into a Lotus Elise, which, by the way, I did myself. I bought the Lotus Elise in 1997. I then measured through, I did all the experiments, and I actually threw away the concept. Because taking a Lotus Elise and putting batteries into it, and putting an electric motor in it, is sexy. Mm. Okay? But doesn't solve the problem. So I looked at that issue and said, what is the story with power storage? And power storage is an issue that, to my mind, is being attacked the wrong way. Everyone's considering batteries. Batteries is not a bad thing, but there's a weight issue. And you need to use, and I've developed a concept which runs, put it this way, I'm looking at about 250 watt hours per kilogram of storage.
Wow.
It's not battery bound. Okay? It's actually going back to first principles. Let's take the figures out of this. Obviously, I have to prove it.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to prove it.
Is it going to be capacitor based or? Nope, it's not capacitor.
Should I say, there will be capacitors involved. Okay, capacitors are very good. We debated whether to use super caps or normal caps. Mm-hmm. Simply because capacitors are there to give you very quickly, very fastly, just instantaneous things. For example, a base, I come to a traffic light, I brake. There, a capacitor with a short term, I mean, let's face it, a capacitor the size of your thing will store about 100 watts. So the weight to energy storage ratio capacitor is not bad. The trouble is the cost.
And the self-discharge.
Yeah, the self-discharge. So it's not an issue. You have to, supercapacitors are better in that sense, but the self-discharge issue is there. You can use it for an instantaneous. I'm thinking that what you need to do is the user wants to have, when he puts his foot on the accelerator, he wants to go. That's where a capacitor will help. But the actual power storage, without saying more than I've done
yeah,
said
yeah.
now.
So it's not battery, it's not capacitors, but it sounds fancy. It's not compressed air, is it?
I looked at compressed air, I looked at hydraulics, I looked at a lot of things.
Yeah.
It's something that when you see it, you will say, why the heck has no one thought of it before?
Is it a flywheel?
That's kinetic. A kinetic, let's face it. Do you want to drive a car on a corner with a flywheel spinning at 25,000 RPM? Have you tried doing that?
No, but I'm sure it'd be fun.
There's no way a car which has a flywheel, which has kinetic energy, is going to go around a corner. It'll be great for a straight line ride, but it'll not go around corners.
Is it the only other thing I can pick up is spring energy? Are you waning springs?
The point is, that's what I'm saying. When you hear what I'm doing, you go.
Obvious.
And this is my problem. It is so obvious that I spent 15 years looking at it, not seeing it. I spent 15 years looking at this problem, and I didn't see the solution. And I saw the solution if I tell you where I saw the solution, then you'll know what the solution is. It is so bloody obvious. Okay?
Well, I'm curious. Yeah. I guess we'll see at the qualifying race, right?
You'll see it beforehand, obviously. Okay, yeah. So we're talking about three things. We're talking about one, and the issue is that the car is driven by computers. Mm-hmm. Okay, that'll do, and that's why I call my whole concept intelligent energy. We've got today, in a petrol motor, or you call it a gasoline motor, we are wasting over 80% of what's in there right now. It's going out through bad aerodynamics. The key is the heating or the cooling. We have a huge cooling loss out the exhaust and out the cooler. Because we need coolers, we have a bad aerodynamic flow. Mm-hmm. So you reduce the temperature problem, you automatically reduce your aerodynamics, or you improve your aerodynamics, so you increase efficiency. By increasing the efficiency, you have and you don't use batteries as your storage medium, which are heavy. Mm-hmm. You go for weight. Then suddenly you start talking an issue that you save weight of all issues, you save aerodynamics. So your actual requirement that you need to drive the car
goes
way down. And every single step comes into line. Okay, this is why my concept also looks at not taking, there are a couple of good ideas here. I mean, as you can see here, I spoke to, you've probably seen this already. This article is probably known to you.
Yes, Supercars, okay. Amory Lovin, of course.
I met him in 1998. Mm-hmm. Okay, I went to visit him. The interesting part is, and this is the most interesting part why I actually met him, is this is the part you'll love. When I issued my patent application, you will see my application date.
March 1993.
Yeah. The first official publication by Amory Lovin was
March 1993.
Look at the day.
31. You probably beat him.
4 days.
Yeah, 4 days.
4 days. Okay. The concepts are different. Emery's concept is something about weight, and his idea is weight and aerodynamics issue, tires, stuff like that, which is the route most people are going today. Mm-hmm. He is the forerunner, without a doubt. Okay.
Yeah, he's been selling the weight decompounding thing for...
Lorema is exactly that. Low resistance mobility is exactly that. My idea is a different issue. And when I met Emery in 1998, he turned around and said, you are 15 years ahead of your time. And he's right. He was actually very right. In 5 years' time, it'll probably be... The issue is centralized computers, energy management, and taking the energy you've got in a vehicle and not wasting it. The hybrids, the Priuses of the world, they're great, but at what cost? And all they're doing is they're saving braking energy. That's all they really do. That's all the Prius does.
And they allow you to have a slightly smaller engine, which gets you better efficiency. That's the other
thing. Yes, but, okay, so to summarize what we're doing is we've gone through the process now, it's 20 years. Original idea, computer controlled, modular based. I've then spent time on different aspects. One is the energy efficiency, of the engine. Mm. The second was the actual vehicle design. That's why we've entered into both categories.
Mainstream and alternative?
The mainstream will be a normal vehicle. It'll be a normal vehicle that you drive, and I'm still debating whether to check a small ECU or not. If we get it right, if the penalties we incur through the all the problems that ECU brings, we will probably even think of doing taking an ECV. Replacing the ECV with our drive, powertrain, engine, and controls.
So you're going to retrofit an existing vehicle?
We will. The mainstream will be retrofitting an existing vehicle. Why? To prove that it does not have to be a specialized vehicle.
Yes.
That's the whole concept, to prove that the energy management concept, coupled with our motor and our power storage, the hybrid drive, nothing new, okay? It's common knowledge. My engine and my power storage. And when you see the power storage, it's going to say, why hasn't that been thought of before? It's very simple. That, put into a normal vehicle, will show you that it's possible to take a normal vehicle, today's run-of-the-mill vehicle. We thought first of Audi A4, that sort of size vehicle, which now currently has a consumption 5.5 to 6 liters of diesel. Mm-hmm. So a diesel, a 1.9 turbo diesel A4, take it as base vehicle. But I'm actually thinking of going a route higher than that. If I can get it right, we'll go for a larger vehicle than A4, just to prove that it does work. So the mainstream vehicle will be a normal vehicle. The alternative vehicle will be, and this is now again the problem I have, if I tell you what it's like, what it's going to be, you'll see the beauty of it. Mm-hmm. So based on this idea, there have been 3 new developments, and then the rest is sort of putting a package together. It's basically, as you can see, I can't give you more information on the technology. What stage are we at? The designs are finished. We're at the stage now, we're building prototypes. Okay, we're building 2 prototypes. We're building the engine and the power storage. Those are being built as prototypes, as the actual devices. And they will be tested straight to run-of-the-mill tests. The body design, or the alternative vehicle, we are busy building a vehicle right now. The reason why I can't give you a drawing, and you see the homepage, the drawings, if you see the drawing, you'll see what the design's about. Okay? It's the background idea is not aerodynamics, it's more functionality. It has a functional advantage. I've been able to tell Dan Foley, he knows about it, but obviously under the no publication issue.
NDA.
Dan Foley and Kristen, who I met in Frankfurt in October last year, they know the idea, and when they heard the idea, they realized of the, shall we say, possible benefits of it. But they can't obviously divulge the idea as well.
That's okay. We'll all get to see it soon.
Okay. I think hopefully what else? Stage I'm at is basically we're building the physical prototype with a normal engine. So the physical prototype right now, the alternative vehicle, is being built with a normal, straight run-of-the-mill, other box, petrol engine, driven with a normal gearbox, just to prove the actual body concept.
Okay. And then later you'll mate it with your engine and storage.
Exactly. Okay. So the idea is we're doing parallel. We're building an engine. Mm-hmm. And all I can say is I can give you the one tip. It's a variable stroke motor.
Okay.
Okay. Now you can say, what is variable? Is it the actual stroke length is variable, like the DiZotto? I don't know if you've seen the DiZotto design, Mercedes-Benz. They actually have the piston length can be varied.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. So you then, in your rotation cycle, you can move the length of the piston up or down, and that way you have a different compression ratio.
Yeah.
That's a DiZotto design. One could call that a variable stroke engine. I can always say my design is a variable stroke, dynamic stroke. So it's the number of strokes that make the each difference. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I'll have to think about what that means. But
just say dynamic strokes. We all think in normal categories. We know we've heard of 2-stroke motors, we've heard of 4-stroke motors.
Okay. Yeah, so you're going to change it somehow and have extra or fewer strokes sometimes?
Just say the number of strokes, shall we say, materially affects the efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I saw an interesting design once for a 6-stroke engine.
Yes.
Where the additional 2 strokes involved adding water, liquid water, which would cool the engine. So they got rid of the radiator and they got power from the expansion, like basically a steam cycle tacked on the end of the auto cycle.
There have been ideas like that since 1945, really. In the 30s, the old Mustang airplanes, the famous Mustang and the airplanes used water injection. That's an old trick. Mm-hmm. You use water injection to, one, increase your compression, because water, when your petrol explodes and you have water vapor within the petrol, the water vaporizes at the same time as the petrol, because the petrol exploding causes the water to vaporize.
Which increases your compression.
Increases your power stroke. It's an effect that works. Okay, they use the Second World War was used for big planes, no problem. Racing engines use it. They have what's it called? Water injection, no problem. You have lots of devices that, for example, there's a device in the market you can buy that will catalyst out water into H and O. They call it HO gas, and then inject the HO gas into the combustion cycle. And that so-called increases the efficiency or increases the engine. That is, I think they're forgetting the fact that they haven't measured the temperature. Because the point you brought up was injecting water into a six-stroke motor causes a cooling cycle, which is a working cycle.
Yeah.
That's the part that's interesting. Okay? So you, in some ways, use a cooling cycle to also a working cycle. The HO motors are bullshit, because all they're doing, the HO gas is just simply water, and if they measured their temperature, they would find out that they actually have got slightly reduced temperature in the motor, and that's where they're getting extra energy from. Okay, so one of your team members, the teams, is called Fuel Vapor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the car upstairs, the yellow one.
Yeah, the Fuel Vapor, that is also technology that makes sense. Okay, it's known that ejecting fuel vapor into a petrol vapor into an engine increases your efficiency. Okay, it works. There's a guy in Miami who's built a device that does exactly that.
Yeah, and the combination of that with their great aerodynamics is how they got to 92 miles per gallon. Yeah.
Okay, so that's where we're going. So the idea is that the fuel vapor issue is an issue. The water cooling is an issue. Okay, there are a number of things. And the problem here is, how do you put this together into one device that works simply? Last point I'm going to say is that my motor can run off either gasoline or gas, as in
natural gas,
or hydrogen. Okay, I'm leaving diesel out of it because the diesel is a more heavy thing, and it's just different. But it'll run, at this point in time, it'll run hydrogen, or natural gas, or gasoline.
Cool.
Okay, so the hydrogen-based vehicle has the advantage that there'll be a zero emission, effectively. The emission then moves to somewhere else, because that's the whole issue that some of the politicians don't even think about, is that when
somebody
you
somebody makes the hydrogen somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, so when you make hydrogen, you actually... So to me, it's if the politicians want to have zero emission vehicles, fine, then we use hydrogen. The fact that the emission goes somewhere else, but the whole issue is that I want to get the efficiency of the motor up to such a point that it's high efficiency, so that we, it's still the most efficient way to transport energy is in gasoline. No one liquid fuel. No one else has yet brought up a way of transporting energy. That's even close. And batteries, batteries are just so, that's absolutely, we're talking a 1,000-to-1 difference. I mean, 1 liter of petrol or gasoline that runs at 80% efficiency.
Yeah, well, Tesla's the perfect example of that. Their, 900-pound battery pack stores less than the equivalent of 2 gallons of gasoline.
And that's at today's, let me just give you an example. If you just take this down, where's my pen? 900 pounds, which is 450 kilograms, mm-hmm. equals 2 liters gasoline, okay, which is 2 kgs. That is actually running at around about 18% to 20% efficiency, max. Actually, about 16%. If we can knock this up to 65-70% mm-hmm. efficiency, you're looking at a ratio here of 4 times. So suddenly you can take this 450 kilograms and not compare it to 2 liters, but you can compare it to 0.5 liters. And there you have I was saying earlier on, 1,000-to-1 ratio. That's actually the real ratio. 1 liter equals 1,000 kilograms of battery. That's your actual real efficiency you're talking about. So the idea of using a battery It's total quark.
Well, I mean, you make sacrifices, right?
Yes.
You can't use them, but you got to be like Tesla. You have, yeah. have to have a suspension that can hold 3,000 pounds.
Yeah, but excuse me. What are you, when you're driving a traffic light, what do you use? What's your biggest problem in city driving?
Yeah, it's your acceleration.
Acceleration.
Yeah.
It's weight. Okay. I mean, why did I, in my original concept, I talk about active suspension? Why? Because only with an active suspension can I bring the weight under the vehicle and still keep the comfort factor up.
Mm-hmm. The handling.
Okay. The Merc S-Class has a better drive than a Golf. Or in America, a Lincoln Town Car, or your big Lincoln, is better than your Neon. Why? It's simply more weight against unsprung mass. You've got this heavy car holding down tires. Okay. The second you bring the weight down in the car, you lose comfort. So you don't have to bring into a situation where you go active suspension. As soon as the second you go for active suspension, you can bring weight down even more. Because then you can actually you drive your wheels actively.
You control how it feels rather than...
And this is the whole, my original concept did exactly that. It said, use the computer to control the efficiency and to control
how it feels.
The comfort. Yeah, anyway. But for the XPRIZE, at this point in time, I'm concentrating on the engine side. I'm not concentrating on the actual the drive.
Okay? Yeah. So let's talk about the automotive XPRIZE. How did you hear about the prize?
I got to a point last year in March when I closed my project down. I've spent 20 years and about 200,000, 300,000 euros on my idea.
Yeah, filing patents and...
I've been running doors and I've spoken to top-level government employees. I've had meetings with the Greens in Germany where a head of the Green Party told me, he said, we don't want a big car that is fuel efficient. We want to educate the people to drive small cars. Mm-hmm. I thought, okay, what sort of comment is that? I've been to venture capitalists and they've all said, great idea, but why don't you sell it to the big car companies? I've met with the ex-M chairman of one of the biggest car manufacturers in the world, and he said, your concept is a no-goer with us. We have too much invested in current technology to even think of changing it.
Mm-hmm.
He said, that's the biggest problem.
Vested interest.
Yeah, vested interest. So the car companies won't do it. The venture capitalists say, how will you as an individual person, how are you able to compete against the big car companies? Why don't you sell to big car companies? Then I had a situation, I went to the German government, I said, right, I'd like to take up your grants, which are the sort of, we call it Technologie Fördermittel, which is technology grants.
And it's a small business grant?
Yeah, kind of small business grant, which would have worked. And I said to them, no problem, we'll give it to you. All we will have to do is check your concept. I'm going, okay, now how are you going to do that? Oh, we'll send your concept to four or five big car companies.
Oh.
what did I say?
Yeah.
I mean, I looked at this guy, and my mouth dropped up, and I said, excuse me, do you realize we have to know that your idea is plausible. I said, excuse me, if my idea was plausible...
They wouldn't tell you it wasn't.
They wouldn't tell. I mean, there's a classic. So I've spent a lot of time running around. I've seen private investors. I've seen large companies. I've seen Emery Lovins, who saw my idea 10 years ago. Yes.
And the Automotive XPRIZE is your new way.
No. What happened was I closed the idea down. Last year in February, I finally said, let's worry. I got married. I said to myself, okay, now I have to worry about cap the dream and get back to the reality. And I then read an article in a Spiegel magazine in Germany, Spiegel Online, which brought out the XPRIZE, an article about it. That was in, I think it was March last year.
Yeah, I think the draft rules were announced in March. That's right.
And Spiegel Online published an article. I read this article. I got into this homepage immediately. I read about it, and I then did the first contact with Neil Anderson 2 days later, and I did my LOI, I think, 3 or 4 weeks later. I got immediately, because to me, that's the XPRIZE is solving that main issue, and that is the issue of the honest broker. As I can now say, right, I'm taking on XPRIZE, there'll be a marketing side, there'll be a publicity side coming through, which will then give my investor, or the investors, whoever, will give them the benefit that they'll get from. I was able to say, okay, I'm no longer going to the technology department and say, please give me $2 million to build this thing, because technology departments, they have to somehow have a return benefit. I can now go to marketing departments and say, give me a certain amount of your marketing budget. I will build a vehicle, and the X Prize participation will give you back
the marketing you expect.
Yeah. So the X Prize, the beauty of it is being giving exactly that back, what's driving it. It gives us cross triangulation between marketing, technology, and public, the investment. That's the part I still I'm criticizing. X Prizes, shall we say, they you need to get your sponsorship, you say your market effect better. Mm-hmm. Okay, having a sponsor, a big sponsor is an insurance company, great,
right.
Perfect. Okay, what you're doing is good. Okay, which you are doing the most important part of the X Prize.
Yeah, the publicity and making sure that is the part that's heard.
Yeah,
right?
That is the part that's really the most important, because without that, forget the X Prize. There's no way I can go to an investor and say, give me, on the technology side, I can't get money. There's no way that, in this industry, the industry is so conservative, so the X Prize allows me to tap into the marketing department's funds. And that's the benefit. Mm-hmm. That's the beauty of it. Okay? And I think that's where also you guys need to concentrate on, is how do you open that app even more? And bring in the sponsors. Bring in sort of sponsors, say, okay, you know, sort of, because let's face it, I can buy a Monet or a paint to put my wall. Great. Get that idea out. Invest into the X Prize. Sponsor the X Prize and think of it as investing into the future of this planet. Okay?
Just like Progressive themselves, yeah. Right? Sponsors have the same motivation.
Let's put it this way. We have certain countries that go start and spend lots of money trying to make new oil sources or defend oil sources. If they took that money that they spent on defending oil sources somewhere, I think, yeah. You know what I mean.
And instead spend it on using less oil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we spent like $1 billion running around the world doing things. Okay. The amount of money that we spent securing oil sites, if we have put that money into reducing our dependence on oil,
would have been a lot more effective.
I personally believe also that we should jack up oil. I mean, Europe, we're paying now already, we're paying $3 a litre for diesel and petrol. I don't know what you guys pay here.
That's about right. $3 a gallon here.
Yeah, we pay $3 a litre.
Yeah, which is a lot more expensive.
Okay, it's 4.5 times. I think 1 litre, 1 gallon is 4.5 litres?
Yeah.
Okay, so our fuel costs 4.5 times as much. We need to have fuel in the States costing $20 a gallon.
Yeah, that would get us some serious progress. Actually, even right now, I mean, $3.5 a gallon, we're already getting progress.
It's slow. In Europe, we are paying, give you an example, we are paying currently $3 times 4. We're paying $13 a gallon.
A gallon.
Okay? And they should jack it up to 20. I'm a great believer in saying, whack up the price. But, and this is where it comes in. The oil price, the majority of the oil price in Europe is taxes. But these taxes are not being reinvested into improving transportation.
Yeah, vehicles. Most of it, does it go to building roads there too?
No. It goes into paying salaries of government employees.
General
which
coffers.
Which is utter bullshit. Okay. To me, that's also an issue that needs to be talked about, is the actual increasing the price of fuel, but using that those funds that come from that to fund new technologies to reduce dependence on oil. Okay. To answer your question, X Prize, newspaper article, March last year. Sorry about project.
And it got you restarted.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so the final thing now is financing and business plans. You're looking for sponsors, yes?
I'm looking for sponsors. I myself have restructured companies. I advise companies how to, shall we say, get their business plans in order. Mm-hmm. So I think business plans on my side are...
Your strong suit, yeah.
That's my business. I mean, I've restructured companies. I've restructured companies from small to fairly large, so that is not the issue. The business plan, I don't really foresee a problem in making it. To me, business plans will have one big problem, is there lots of thumbsuck. It's, you take wild guesses at certain things. Yeah. It's,
well, you make financial projections for 10 years and everyone knows.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Let's but you take, have to make it anyway.
Yeah. You have to make a business plan. Let's face it. The guys that made the business plan of Google,
yeah,
if they'd have turned around and said, this is our business plan, and put their energy into the business plan, they wouldn't have got a single cent because no one would have believed
what actually happened.
I know. I mean, the venture capitalist that invested $200,000 in 2001, I think it was, they got a return of over $1 billion.
Unbelievable.
Okay, so that's why business plans. If you put what you perceive reality, and Google was there at the right time. This area, this whole issue of cars. If someone brings out a car that uses, if one of these competitors here, this field, is able to produce a marketable car as the prize wants it.
Yeah, at 100 miles per gallon, it's going to be.
It's going to walk over the industry because the big car industry cannot adapt. Their problem is their mentality. Mm-hmm. The guys are mechanical engineers. They are business guys. They have no clue. They run
the
big
other
corporations.
Big thing that I'm always on about is steel stamping. They have all these like billion-dollar plants that stamp steel, and they don't want to give them up.
We don't want to. I mean, let's face it. If you look at the human bones, I'm a great believer looking at nature. Look at the human bone. Look at the bones of birds. Mm-hmm. Look at the structure of strong grasses. They are not solid materials. Now, why the hell do we build cars with solid materials? Okay, they are all space frame. They're all not space frames. They're all what's called a smooth surface with a look at human bone. The human bone is a smooth surface. It's a porous, completely porous. Why do we build cars with solid metal? I don't understand it.
Okay? Steel stamping. What can you say, right? Yeah. I don't know.
Okay, so the idea is, you need to have some sort of material. But at this point in time, I'm concentrating on the energy efficiency side. I'm not going to worry about the body and the active suspension, all that sort of shit. I mean, my original patent, the idea, if you look here, I mean, originally I had it in there. The last part of the design was, okay, fly-by-wire. My original design, 1986, had a fly-by-wire controls. Do you know it's still not allowed in Germany?
Yeah, it's still, I think, not there's allowed. Still laws about
it's
it here as well.
Not allowed in Europe.
They legislate that it has to be mechanically connected,
yeah,
right?
I mean, rear view mirrors. Do you know that there's a law that says that the rear mirror has to be a piece of glass, a mirror? It can't be a camera based.
Yeah. Okay. Or even plexiglass.
Yeah, can't be. Okay, and this is the issue. To me, what's it called? The original design I had made was that chassis and the propulsion could either be wheels or air. It's totally independent. It's not, to me, it was unimportant of how I move. Because sometimes, on a smooth surface, a hydrofoil is more efficient than a wheel.
The ground effect, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so in closing, do you have a website, contact
yes.
info?
Yes.
Well,
www.herf.net. That's the website.
Mm-hmm.
The contact info is on the website. Everything's there. Phone number, email address, information. We'll obviously be adding information to the website. We aim by the end of summer, we should have a working prototypes, okay, of the two different areas.
Okay,
end of
cool.
summer, we're looking at probably end of summer, we should have the first realistic idea, and then year end, we would then start have the actual two vehicles ready. That's what the plan is.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. I hope it was interesting.
And that was Wolf Herf of Herf Duo. This is the XPRIZE Cars Podcast, Episode 10. I'm Eric Boyd. If you've liked what you've heard here, please check out my website at xprizecars.com. Thanks for listening.